Welcome to the Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Eurospace Hub aims to digitally connect the space ecosystem in Europe, from tech transfer offices to industry, space accelerator networks, research centers, and other universities. Eurospace Hub will allow these actors to easily connect with financial opportunities, from the Horizon Europe framework to space research, space technology, and to accelerator programs. Eurospace Hub will bridge the gap between academic institutions and industry using a collaborative ecosystem and entrepreneurial mindset inside the universities and beyond. Every month, with the Eurospace Hub special episodes, we want to share stories about space technology and research with you. Enjoy the conversation. Today, your host is Jara Pascual, founder and CEO of CollabWith. Our guest is Sara Lucatello, astronomer, researcher, and vice president of the European Astronomical Society. She is talking about why it's so important to protect our sky from satellite radiations and how it's important to keep dark and quiet zones for observation. What is the main objective of the European Astronomical Society and what are the needs and the issues now we have with astrophysics research? So enjoy the conversation. I welcome Sara Lucatello to the podcast, Business of Collaboration, to the special edition of Eurospace Hub.
Thank you, Yara. I'm very glad to be here with you today.
We met last week in the European Parliament about exoplanets.
Indeed.
And you were mentioning something super interesting, like you were coming from another committee in the Commission to talk about the protection of our sky, which was super interesting to hear this from you.
Indeed, this is something that I've been working on, and it's in, you know, part of my activities in the European Astronomical Society is exactly to do with that.
So we are going to go more in deep later, but I wanted to know from you, what is your story about becoming the vice president of the European Astronomical Society and an astronomer of the Istituto Nazionale di Astrofisica in Italy?
So let's start chronologically. So I first became an astronomer at INAF, which is Istituto Nazionale di Astrofisica. So that's a classic academic career. So I did my PhD in astronomy in Padova. And then after a few years of the classic postdoctoral work, I was first in the US, then in Germany, I got a faculty job at INAF and I went back to Italy, where I've been for over a decade now. About being a vice president of the European Astronomical Society is more recent development. So I've been working on EDI issues, equity, diversity and inclusion issues in STEM for a couple of decades now already. I started quite young. And several years ago, the European Astronomical Society got in touch with me asking me whether I was interested in chairing their ethics committee. They wanted to produce their code of conduct and ethics document and good practices in European astronomy. And I worked in that capacity for a year. And through that work, I realized that I could be of service to the wider community. So I ran for council and I was elected in 2018. And I've been serving as vice president with a portfolio of activities that include EDI, as I said before, but also the organization of our annual meeting, which is the largest astronomical conference in Europe, and also the protection of the dark and quiet sky from satellite interference.
This is super interesting, the part of gender. Maybe we can talk later, but what are your main research areas as an astronomer?
Yeah, indeed. I am what we call a galactic archaeologist. That means that, I know it's funny, I basically study the history of our galaxy through looking at the stars in the sky in details. So the stars in this context are like fossils that provide clues to the formation of the Milky Way, of our galaxy. So I use data collected with ground-based telescopes, like the European telescopes in Chile, for instance, plus collected from big satellites, And with that, I derive information about the composition of the stars, their velocity, their position, and their age. And this tells me where and how they form and probes how our galaxy forms.
After this session we had in the parliament, I was talking more with my kids about the exoplanets and everything, and we were reviewing the whole books we have about universe. And it's very curious, like every planet is completely different. So, and every star and the diversity we have.
Diversity is astounding.
It's incredible. Yesterday we were in the chapter of Jupiter and we were with the moons, and my son was saying, how is possible like one moon is like frozen and the other is like in the same surroundings? And this was fascinating. I think like you mentioned during the session, very good, like it's about curiosity. Yes. And be open-minded on what are you going to find out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's curiosity driven is always very important in discovery and in research. And this is what we do. It's curiosity driven endeavors, really.
Why is it so important to protect our sky from the satellite radiation and to keep dark and quiet zones for observation?
In order for astronomers to effectively do their jobs, to observe astronomical sources, we need a sky that is protected, and mostly it is dark. What do we mean? Dark in general. So as little interference as possible. Okay, so for optical telescopes, that means normal, that you have to reduce normal light, what we think about as visible light. So you have to be mindful of that. For radio telescopes, on the other hand, that means you need to be mindful of radio emissions. So you need to have no nearby radio emissions, like including, for instance, cell phone towers. So historically, astronomers have pursued this by building telescopes in remote areas. And you can think about the major telescopes are up on the mountains in Chile or in remote areas, Australia or South Africa. This approach has worked because so far we've enjoyed local protection. You know, generally these areas are recognized as protected areas by the local government or, you know, whoever is in charge of the policies for that area. So there are areas that are protected from the visible light and they're the so-called radio quiet zones. However, the new space economy and the proliferation of satellites changed that. Because, of course, especially low LEO satellites roam globally. It's not something that your local government can regulate on one side. And at the same time, it is something that is extraterritorial. So it happens all over the world. So this is why it is really important at this stage that we find a way to protect astronomical endeavors, our activities, and to make sure that the new space economy happens and develops in a sustainable manner. So in which astronomers are also stakeholders and we reach a shared stewardship of the skies because we're also interested parties and we can all do our activities if we work together to make sure that we don't encroach on each other.
And I think that's a super mega controversial point, I think, because one day after this session in the parliament, I saw an article in one of the newspapers, like already the Hubble, they cannot receive proper images already. Yeah. So it's a very critical, and I think you mentioned this, like we are in a very critical situation, you know.
We are. It's really urgent, right? The number of satellites has exploded. It's really growing exponentially. And the numbers of satellites that have been licensed so far is incredibly large. You know, as they go to fruition, as they become, launches continue and more players enters the arena, it becomes more and more critical to effectively regulate the space in a way that includes our activities as stakeholders, which is has not been an obvious issue so far. And this is, it worked fine, as I said before, because LEO satellites were a few and we could deal with it. But now it has become a serious problem. And so it is a critical issue. We perceive it as an existential threat. And we've had constructive interaction with industry. This is something that we pursue. And we understand that they have their benefits for humanity in what they do. And we believe they can develop their business while at the same time ensuring that we can keep doing our jobs. And we've been engaging with several industry players, very positively, I have to say. But there are many you know, in the arena. And we need to be mindful and to be very aware and try to engage with as many as possible. And at the same time, engage with policymakers to make sure that this space is also regulated and that sustainable space development becomes a reality.
And I think it's linked as well to the protection of our planet.
Yeah.
And as well, the part of, well, regarding our part of responsibility about innovation is why we are focusing in one direction when we have to focus in the other direction of innovation. And this is maybe because the dialogues are not there and we see only a little part of the picture of what is happening in a space and not the whole picture. And I mean this because I put a question, but it was super controversial there in the session. Like, well, you know, all these accelerators we have from the agencies and the industry is going to create more now nanosatellites, you know, and it's a fashion thing. And very easy to build satellites. And now it's how to launch a satellite, even if it's, we are talking about millions of euros. Apparently, no one is talking about, never, ever, no one was doing a regulation on the governance of our sky and atmosphere. And this is pretty shocking, maybe because before it was some governments talking to each other, you know, like agencies from every country controlling the whole satellite, turning around. And now we have more private actors, like almost everyone, if they have money, they can build and launch without informing, with following the protocols of launching traditional satellites. So it's a very, like you mentioned as well, very diplomatic issue and how we can solve, but the people, they have not even this information.
If you want to be part of the European space innovation ecosystem in a digital format, go to our website to read more information about how to join. www.eurospacehub.com.
Yeah, I mean, players that launch generally licenses for launching and for operating in the country where they want to provide service, right? Those are two different levels of getting licenses. The point is that globally, there are no clear regulations. There are actually no regulations in this regard, because before it was just assumed those launches were so few and far in between, that was really not an issue. Things are changing. Even in this arena, regulators are realizing this is an issue. Regulators are thinking ahead, because beside the problem of astronomy, of course, there's the huge problem of space debris. That is a major problem. Already now, satellites have to make an enormous number of adjustments to their orbit to avoid collisions. There are multiple collision alerts. I'm just thinking of ESA satellites, you know, the scientific satellites, but many others. It's just a daily happening for them because there's so many satellites. And of course, as the number increases and there are collisions, et cetera, space debris will be created and that will become more complicated. So even thinking ahead, one of the issues is to allow space to be a resource that can be used even for future generation. We cannot play it so unsafely that it becomes impossible to launch a satellite in the future for whatever reason, right? And this is something that without careful regulations, without a responsible behavior by all actors, might happen. So this is an urgent problem, I think, from many points of view. I think one of the key things, you mentioned innovation, you mentioned that aspect. And I think one of the key things there is that innovation, in my opinion, is born where communities meet and overlap, two different communities, bringing together different expertise that can really foster new solutions to old and new problems. And so I think this is such a multifaceted problem that I believe it's in the interest of many communities, different communities, because we mentioned astronomy and we mentioned industry, you know, launchers, but they're also, as you briefly mentioned before, the environmental protection issues, climate change studies, because they also use satellites not only, you know, there are different aspects of using satellites, and they want to keep launching satellites for monitoring crops and oceans and, you know, the CO content, the CO2 content of the atmosphere, et cetera, for a long time. And so it is important to find a way in which we can sustainably develop space. But there's also the issue, which doesn't get brought up so often, but it's in terms of social justice. If all the countries or the players that have the money to develop space fill in space, the capacity, that means that in the future, communities that will in the future have the need or the resources to have a space program will not be able to, because all the resources would have been used by the players that have more power or have more finance at the time. So all these are extremely multifaceted issues that need to be approached in a synergic view. Of course, we as an astronomical community are playing our part. And one of the interesting things that has been happening on our side is that the International Astronomical Union created a Center for the Protection of the Dark and Quiet Skies, tried to involve multiple players. So industry, especially American industry, but also European industry, OneWeb, they have really collaborated with us. They've been open and engaging, and this has been very positive. SpaceX, Amazon Kuiper, they've been on board with representatives working with us. Policymakers are on board, but also people who have other concerns like community engagement in terms of the impact it has on some traditional practices of native populations, because that's also, you know, the night sky is a resource and it's a sacred space for some of native populations, especially in the Americas, and also some environmental protection concerns. And so I hope that with time we'll be able to bring together even more community, but even more communities, I'm sorry, but we have already started what I believe is a quite important process. And hopefully we'll be quick enough to make this happen, that it can, you know, that this problem will be solved, or at least we'll find an acceptable comparison for all players involved in a short time frame.
Yeah, you mentioned the description of innovation, but what does it mean for you, collaboration for innovation?
As I said, I believe collaboration, if I think about innovation, the first thing that comes to mind is, as I said, meeting at the edge of two communities, two groups of expertises, and using a synergic approach to leverage each other's expertise and really find a new solution to the problem. So in this context, I think collaboration is key. Collaboration really across a wide cloth of communities, not only within one community, which is very important for some specific cases, but I think especially in such multifaceted and complicated cases, it's really crucial to leverage each other's expertises via collaboration. And for this, it's very important to me. And this is not obvious for communities that do not obviously need or do not naturally have interactions, right? So this is, I think, one challenge that we have. And we as European Astronomical Society try to foster that, try to engage with policymakers also at the European level. That's something that is quite important to us. We engage with the policymakers, with major operators, astronomical facilities, and different European astronomical communities to not only assess how this, you know, problem might affect their operations, but also to help us raise awareness among policymakers. We you know, organize campaigns to inform European Parliament members through their constituents in their respective countries. We try to engage with the Commission, as I mentioned before. And I have to report personally, I mean, this is just a report about the Commission, that I was very positively impressed by the Commission outlook with this. The European Union has unveiled plans for its own constellation, which is not of commercial interest, but it's of a public interest. And so I'm glad to report that they're really taking a virtuous approach to this, meaning that they really want to do it sustainably. They are committed to sustainability, also from the point of view of astronomy, from other point of view, from other interest groups as well. And they want us to be involved. And I hope, I really hope that this virtuous example will make them the gold standard for being a good player in this arena, and the others will follow suit. Because one of the concerns we have is some industry players engage with us actively and we pursue the others we know of, but there's several we might not know of. It's not like we are aware of all the plans in all the countries. It's difficult to keep track of that, and often they're not publicly announced. And so, at least not in an obvious way. And so this for us is a big win if the European Commission goes in this direction, announces it publicly, and follows through. This would be the golden standard to follow, to be perceived as a good actor. And everyone wants to be perceived as a good actor and not a bad actor. So this is the hope of our activities. And this is how I see a role right now in this context.
And then the question is, we are looking about the podcast inside here for Eurospace Hub. So Eurospace Hub wants to facilitate this collaboration as well from different research space communities. So what does it mean for you, your work and your society, the Eurospace Hub?
So I think facilitating collaboration across this, you know, different aspects of space research in this context is really crucial. There are players we're aware of. I'm sure several players were not. And some players might not be aware that we have this problem or that the environmental protection community has this problem. And so having the possibility of finding, fostering for this exchange would be fantastic and really precious, I believe. So facilitating collaboration, facilitating just each other's awareness, I have to say, is something that I'm sure would prove quite critical in this coming years.
You are the vice president of the European Astronomical Society. So what is the main objective of the society?
So our society is meant to promote and advance astronomy in Europe. So we are quite a large society. We have now over 4,500 members, all professional astronomers in Europe and beyond. We work quite closely with national societies and major operators of facilities and pan-European research organizations to support our members in their professional endeavors. So, for instance, one of the things that we really promote is exchange and collaboration. We organize the largest European Astronomical Conference, where about 2,000, between 1,800 and 2,000 astronomers meet every year. It's a major happening. And that is, for instance, the place where big discoveries are announced, with plans are discussed for the future. So in that regard, we really facilitate this exchange. And we also have an important role in facilitating the exchange, particularly between East and West of Europe. We have a large membership from Eastern Europe. And we're very proud to say that we support as much as possible their participation to our meetings and overall European science. Of course, some of these countries are less well-funded than others, and it is up to us to try to make it possible as much as we can to facilitate the collaboration and the participation of our Eastern European members to activities that are generally more lively in the Western community. Again, generally because there's fantastic science in Eastern Europe. I'm not saying that's not the case, but perhaps they have more of a challenge accessing some of the infrastructures or some of the collaborations. And we tried as much as possible to facilitate that.
You are listening to a Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration.
Sarah, now we have always at the end of every podcast super quick questions, because when we are talking about collaboration and communication and leadership, always the personal side of the people always is very important for this. So super quick, Sarah, what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, it's going to be super quick. It depends if I'm working from home, which is about 50% of the time, or I'm at the office, or I'm traveling. Generally, I wake up between 7 and 7.15. I make tea, and I drink tea while checking my emails. I know I shouldn't, but that's the first thing I do. Checking if I have urgent messages, changes in the schedule, etc. And then if I'm working from home, by 8:15, I'm in front of the computer and generally taking the first call. And if I have to go to the office, I start a little later around 9. But yeah, that's what it looks like.
What is your favorite place for holidays?
So lately it's been the Dolomites. I love going up to the Dolomites with my family, and we have a little place there, and we really enjoy it.
What are you doing with your spare time and weekends?
I love to cook and I love to read, both things. I'm quite a lazy person when it comes to free time. But lately, during the pandemic, I took up mountain biking and I became quite a serious mountain biker. And that's what I do a lot during the weekends.
Would you like to recommend a book or a piece of music to the audience?
Yeah, so a very interesting book that I'm reading that is tying back both to astronomy and EDI issues. I'm reading The Sky is for Everyone, which is a collection of essays from trailblazing women astronomers that discuss, you know, their lives, their endeavors, the obstacles they found on their way, starting from, you know, their whole group of women, starting from women who got their PhDs in the 60s and even earlier to women who got their PhDs recently. I really recommend it. It's a very good book.
And the piece of music?
Piece of music. My all-time favorite piece of music is the Overture of Mozart, Don Giovanni. I'm kind of boring, but I love it. It's my all-time favorite piece of music.
We didn't discuss about the gender. So one last question to call out all the women to come to become astronomer.
So I think one of the interesting things of astronomy is that all considered, for being a hard science, we have many more women than other hard sciences. And I think this is one of the secrets of our being able to collaborate so smoothly. I think with respect to other hard sciences, I believe we do much better and we value more soft skills. So I hope to encourage young women to come and make our science, our community even better, even more diverse, not only young women, but members of underprivileged group or underrepresented groups. I think true innovation also comes from diversity. And I think they are the resource that we need to become better, to do more cutting edge science, to get thinking that is really innovative, really outside of the box. So I hope we'll get many more of them with time.
Thank you very much, Sara Locatello, from this super amazing almost masterclass on astronomy policy and astronomy collaboration. So thank you very much and see you soon.
Thank you, Yara.
Thank you for listening to our Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Please share this podcast with your space friends and leave comments on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. See you next month for another story and interview. In the meantime, you can learn more about us on www.eurospacehub.com.